Have you ever looked at something really complex, maybe like a skyscraper standing tall or a satellite whizzing around Earth, and just wondered, how do scientists even start describing this? It's that basic curiosity, you know, that drive to figure out how the world works, how things connect, and what tools we actually use to pin down those relationships.
Yeah, it's fundamental.
So today we're doing a deep dive into, well, the very bedrock ideas behind a lot of physics and really any kind of quantitative thinking.
Exactly.
We're talking about the real basics that let us measure things, compare them, and analyze, well, everything around us.
And our main guide for this source titled Concetti Fondamentali di Fisica, which, yeah, just means fundamental concepts of physics, a really solid foundation.
Right.
It kind of lays out the essential vocabulary and the grammar, you could say, for this language of science.
Okay, so our mission for you today is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
We want to pull out the absolute core ideas from this material. The goal is to give you a clear, concise grasp of how physical quantities get measured, how they relate to each other, often in intricate ways, and how we analyze them. Think of it like getting the starter kit for speaking
A
science.
toolkit, yeah.
All right, let's get into it. We have to start at the beginning, laying the groundwork. That means measurement and basic relationships. It sounds simple, maybe.
But it's critical.
Absolutely critical. Agreeing on basic measurements. Establishing equivalence, you know, what makes two amounts truly the same, and then defining common units of measure.
Indeed. The text really hammers this home. Like, when we talk about area and volume, we start with the standard, the cubic meter.
Okay.
But then we need practical units like the liter, the centiliter, milliliter, things we use.
Right, everyday stuff.
And time, same idea. The second is the base, but then we build up minute, hour, day, month, year. These aren't random. They're agreed upon standards so we can all, communicate clearly.
Avoids total confusion. Okay, so once we can measure things consistently, the next step is comparing them, relating them. And that's where proportions and percentages become so powerful. It's not just school math, right? It's the logic behind scaling almost anything.
That's a great way to put it. With proportions, you have these terms traditionally called extremes and means. Think of it like a seesaw. The extremes are out at the ends, the means are closer in. Understanding how they balance is key, especially if you need to find a missing piece, like calculating a mean term.
And you see this everywhere. The source mentions using proportions to understand similar geometric figures.
Yeah.
You know, same shape, different size, vital for maps, engineering.
Absolutely. Blueprints, scale models.
Yeah. And percentages, well, they're just part of daily life, aren't they? Calculating discounted price or figuring out the percentage variation in something like company profits or stock changes. It all comes back to these basic proportional ideas.
It really does.
So, okay, if measurements and proportions are like the words in basic sentences, then physical formulas must be the blueprints, right? The detailed plans.
That's a perfect analogy.
They show exactly how different quantities connect and interact, like little condensed stories of how things behave.
Exactly. A formula is a model, really. And its parts are variables, quantities that can change.
Right.
And it's important to separate the input variable, the numbers you put in, from the output value the formula gives you back.
And some formulas are really neat because they define unitary quantities. The source uses the classic velocity example. Velocity is just a ratio between quantities, right? Distance over
That's
time,
new.
how much distance per unit of time. It standardizes how we talk about motion.
And what's really cool is what we call the qualitative analysis of a formula.
Okay, what's that?
It means understanding how things behave without plugging in numbers. You look at the structure, you see the role of constants,
Oh, okay.
and you can predict things. Will quantity A increase if quantity B increases? Like area of a square gets bigger if the side gets bigger? Obvious, maybe, but fundamental.
Sure.
Or will it decrease as the other increases? Or maybe it's more complex, like surface pixel density. That involves a denominator.
Right, something divided by something else.
Exactly. So as screen size increases, if the pixel count stays the same, the density drops. Understanding that relationship qualitatively is often more insightful than just calculating one specific number.
Yeah, I get that. It's about the general behavior.
Precisely.
You know, seeing is often believing, or at least understanding. Visualizing data just clicks for a lot of people,
Absolutely.
which is why Cartesian graphs are such a powerful tool. Taking a table of data, just numbers, linking two physical things, and constructing a graph from it, it turns the abstract into something visual.
It does. And to make that visual story clear, you need the right elements. You've got your oriented axes, usually horizontal and vertical, setting the stage.
Your X and Y.
Exactly. And each axis needs a scale, defining what the marks mean. They usually start from an origin, often zero. And importantly, the horizontal and vertical scales don't have to be the same. They often aren't.
Good point. So you set up this grid, and then each data pair from your table becomes a single point on the Cartesian plane. Its location is defined by its coordinates. The abscissa, that's the X value along the horizontal.
Right.
And the ordinate, the Y value up the vertical axis, like an address for each data point.
A precise address. And then the real insight comes from reading the graph. Just looking at the inclination of the curve or line tells you so much.
How it slopes.
Yeah. Is it sloping up? Then one variable grows as the other increases. Is it sloping down? Then one diminishes as the other increases. It's an immediate visual takeaway about the relationship.
Okay. That leads us nicely into talking more about these relationships, specifically proportionality. It comes up again and again in physics.
Yeah.
Let's start with the most straightforward. Direct proportionality.
Right. Direct proportionality. The core idea here is simple. The ratio between the two quantities is constant.
Always the same fraction, basically.
Exactly. And that constant value is called the constant of proportionality, often labeled K. You can write it as a ratio, like yx equals k, or solve for y, yy equals k.
Meaning if one doubles, the other doubles. If one triples, the other triples.
Yeah.
That kind of lockstep relationship.
Perfect.
That's it.
And the source gives a really clear example. The link between kilocalories and mass of, say, a food, there's a constant caloric intake in kcalc. So the total caloric content depends directly on the mass. Double the mass of the food, you double the calories. Simple as that.
Yep. And when you graph this kind of relationship, what do you get?
A straight line, right, going through the origin.
Always. A straight line passing through the origin. And the characteristics of that line, specifically its slope, is the constant of proportionality.
Oh, okay.
You can figure out kcag just by looking at the graph's steepness, and you can write the formula directly from it. Like, graph the perimeter of a square versus its side length, straight line. Slope is 4. Formula, perimeter equals 4 times side.
Got it. Now, related to this is linear dependence. It sounds similar.
It is similar, but more general. The graph is still a straight line, but it doesn't have to go through the origin.
Okay.
Its formula is that classic y equals mx plus q, where m is still the slope, the angular coefficient, telling you the rate of change.
How steep the line is.
Right. And q is the intercept. That's where the line hits the vertical axis, the value of y when x is zero. It's like a starting offset. You can also look at the change in y, delta y, over the change in x, delta x, on the graph to see that slope directly.
Okay, so that's linear. What about things that aren't directly proportional?
Good question. Let's shift to inverse proportionality. Here, it's not the ratio that's constant, but the product of the two quantities.
So as one goes up, the other has to go down to keep the product the same.
Precisely. The formula often looks like x times y equals k, or y equals kx.
Okay, an example might help here.
The source uses a great one. Think about a rectangle with a fixed area.
Right.
If you want to keep the area constant, say 12 square units, and you make one side longer, say from 3 to 4.
The other side has to get shorter from 4 to 3 to keep the area at 12.
Exactly. That's inverse proportionality. And when you graph this, you don't get a straight line. You get this characteristic curve called a branch of an equilateral hyperbola.
Whoa.
It curves downwards and approaches the axes, but never actually touches them. Those axes act as asymptotes.
Interesting shape. Okay. Any other major types?
One more key one is quadratic proportionality.
Like squares and cubes.
Exactly. Involves powers. The classic example is the area of a circle depending on its radius. Area is pi times radius squared.
Right, the r squared part.
That squared is the key. It means the area doesn't just grow steadily with the radius. It grows much faster, quadratically. The formula shows this dependence on the square of the variable.
And the graph for this one, not a straight line, not a hyperbola.
It's an arc of a parabola, that familiar U shape, or half of it, starting from the origin typically. It curves upwards, showing that accelerating increase.
Makes sense.
And it can be really illuminating to graph, say, a direct and a quadratic proportionality on the same axis. You visually see how much faster the quadratic relationship takes off compared to the linear one.
Yeah, that comparison would be stark.
Okay.
Okay, so we have measurements, relationships, formulas, graphs. We've built up quite the toolkit.
We have.
Now, how do we actually use it to solve problems? This seems to lead us straight into resolving equations. They're the workhorses, right?
Absolutely. If formulas are the blueprints, equations are how you calculate specific dimensions or find unknowns using those blueprints. And to manipulate them, you need the principles of equivalence.
Okay, the rules of the game for equations.
Exactly. The first principle is often visualized with a two-arm balance.
Like scales.
Precisely. If it's balanced, whatever you add or subtract from one side, you must do the same to the other side to keep it balanced.
Makes intuitive sense.
And this leads directly to the rule of transport. You can move a term across the equal sign if you just flip its sign from plus to minus or minus to plus. It's just shorthand for adding or subtracting the same thing from both sides.
Clever shortcut. Okay, what's the second principle?
Same balance analogy. If the scales are balanced, you can multiply or divide both sides by the same non-zero amount, and they'll stay balanced.
Right, scaling everything up or down together.
Yep. That gives us the rule of multiplying or dividing both sides. These two principles are really the foundation for almost all algebraic manipulation.
The source has that fun example, the kilo plus half a brick problem. It really shows how translating a word problem into variables and an equation lets you solve it.
It's a classic. Let X be the weight of the brick. Then X equals 1 kilogram plus 12X. Now you just use the principles to solve for X. It turns a riddle into simple algebra.
It really does. So once you can solve equations, another vital skill is deriving inverse formulas. Right?
Crucial. Absolutely crucial. If you know velocity v equals distance d over time, t, v equals dt, you can't just leave it at that. You need to be able to rearrange it.
To find distance or time if you know the other two.
Exactly. Solve for dd, solve for tt, solve for tt, equals dv. The same thing with more complex formulas like the volume of a cylinder. V equals pi r2h.
You need to be able to isolate the radius r or the height h.
Yes, you need to algebraically manipulate the formula to get r by itself or h by itself. That flexibility is key for practical problem solving.
Okay, one last major tool, especially vital in physics where numbers get ridiculously big or incredibly small.
Yes.
Calculations with powers of 10 and scientific notation. It feels like you just can't escape them in science.
You really can't. The universe operates on scales that are just, well, astronomical or subatomically tiny. Powers of 10 are how we manage that.
Right.
A positive power of 10 tells you how many zeros follow the 1 or how many places to move the decimal right. A negative power tells you how many places to move the decimal left after a 0.
So 103 is 1,000, 103 is 0.001.
Exactly. And then there are simple rules for operations. To multiply two powers of 10, you add the exponents.
Like 102 times 103 is 10. 2 plus 3 equals 105.
Perfect. To divide, you subtract the exponents. And to raise a power of 10 to another power, you multiply the exponents.
Okay, simple rule.
And these rules underpin scientific notation, which is just a standard way to write any number.
How does that format work again?
You write the number as a value between 1 and 10, but not 10 itself, multiplied by the appropriate power of 10.
So like 300 becomes 3 by 102. And 0.005 becomes 5 by 10 to 3.
Precisely. Standardizes everything. Makes comparisons easier.
And calculations. Adding and subtracting seems tricky.
It requires one extra step. For addition and subtraction, the numbers must have the same power of 10 before you add or subtract the main number parts.
So you might need to adjust one of them.
Yes. You usually reduce to the smallest exponent present, adjusting the other number accordingly. Then you just add or subtract the front numbers and keep the common power of 10.
Okay, got it. What about multiplying or dividing in scientific notation?
That's actually easier. For multiplication, you multiply the front numbers together and add the exponents of 10. For division, you divide the front numbers and subtract the exponents. For raising to a power, you raise the front number to the power and multiply the exponent by the power.
So you handle the number parts and the exponent parts separately?
Essentially, yes. Makes complex calculations much more manageable.
And the source wraps this up nicely with a practical example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Calculating velocity using scientific notation.
Yeah, it pulls together the formula, VDT, with potentially very large or small distances and times, showing how scientific notation keeps the calculation clean and avoids potentially massive numbers or tons of decimals.
Right. Brilliant. So, okay, let's try and wrap this deep dive up. We've really covered a lot of ground.
We have.
We've basically assembled a foundational toolkit, starting with the absolute necessity of agreed upon measurements and units, moving through proportions and percentages, then understanding physical formulas as blueprints, visualizing relationships with Cartesian graphs, and recognizing different kinds of proportionality, direct, linear, inverse, quadratic.
And finally, the practical application. Solving equations using the principles of equivalence and the indispensable tool of scientific notation for handling extreme scales.
It's quite a comprehensive set of tools.
And the key thing to remember is that these aren't just, you know, abstract math concepts for a test. They are genuinely the language and the tools used every single day to model, predict, and fundamentally understand the physical world.
From the tiniest particles.
Yeah. To the grandest galaxies. This is how science makes sense of it all, how engineers build things that work. It's embedded in everything.
So, maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to take away and chew on. Think about how deeply connected these maybe seemingly basic concepts are with literally every piece of technology or scientific discovery around us.
Mm-hmm.
What everyday things could you start to break down now? Could you analyze them using these ideas of proportionality?
Mm.
Or maybe think about the equations that must be governing them behind the scenes. Perhaps something like how phone battery drains or how sound fades with distance.
Yeah, how do those things scale? What's the underlying relationship?
Exactly. Food for thought.